Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 26th day of May, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. And K-State's Dan O'Brien will join us closer to the bottom of this hour to take up the energy markets. In just 26 minutes, meteorologist John Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll hear University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger's view of the late corn planting season and why past performance is not an indication of future gains. Stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat at 6.12, up or rather down a half cent. September at 6.38, down a half. And December wheat at 6.60 and three quarters for the soft red, a quarter lower. July, the harvest month in Kansas City, up a penny and three quarters at 6.62 and a quarter. From the corn pit nearby July at 4.27 and a half, down two and three quarters. September at 4.37 and three quarters, two and a half lower. And December, down a penny and three quarters at 4.50 and a quarter. March at 4.61, down three quarters of a cent. July soybean futures 19.5 cents higher today, $11.85.5 the settlement price. August at 11.50, up 16 cents, and September at $10.87.5, up 11.25. November 10.42.5, 11 cents higher. January futures at 10.44.25, up 11. July bean meal futures at $390, $15 higher. The August at $373.40, up $13. July soybean oil at $37.75, down 35 cents. August at $37.92, finished 35 cents lower as well. Live cattle futures now, June contract 82.82.5, 30 cents higher. The August up a nickel at 83.82.5. And the August feeders finished 102.57.5, 65 cents higher. September futures up 70 cents at 102.85. June lean hog futures $65.55, finished the day down 42.5 cents. July following suit down 40 cents at $67.17.5 for the July lean hog futures. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the U of I campus. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures for the day, currently trading at $62.45. That is a settlement price, 78 cents higher. August at $63.10, up 72 cents on the afternoon. June ethanol futures today, a settlement price at $1.70, down 2 cents. Natural gas still trading at $353.70. That's up 2 and 2 tenths. And the RBOB gasoline at $185 even, 9 tenths higher. June heating oil or diesel fuel, a half cent lower, rather higher, at $1.54 and 3 tenths. And June propane futures at $72.07, just 2 tenths of a cent higher. Gold futures at $953.10 an ounce, settled down $5.40. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently trading just about 194 points higher at 84.71, and the U.S. dollar at 80.13 is up 0.17 on the afternoon. The CRB index for the day at 245.42 is up 3.06 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own meteorologist, Daniel Pounder. He says tonight, mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range this evening from 56 in the far northwestern parts of Illinois to 68 in the far south. And then tomorrow, in the north and central sections, mostly cloudy. A few widely scattered showers in the south, cloudy scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 62 in the far northern part of Illinois to 84 in the far south. The extended forecast says a few scattered showers may linger on Thursday, primarily in the southern areas. Most areas will be turning drier on Thursday. Mostly dry weather expected on Friday, although models still indicate a chance of a few showers in Indiana and some of the neighboring states. And the dry weather is expected over the weekend and into Monday, with relatively light rainfall during the past few days. The northern area planting operations should resume, of course, this weekend. More on the weather as we get to the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media. It's a Tuesday afternoon. On the line with us to talk about the agricultural futures markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the marketplace. Kind of a unique spread out there in the corn pit, I think. I thought that was fairly interesting. They must be thinking that we'll be short corn by the time we get to 2011.
Well, you know we've got plenty of corn to get through the rest of this year. And there's the big question mark that we'll find out in about an hour about how what our progress was over the weekend. But we saw a lot of planters running hard, and you know, the rain not coming back today, not coming in hard over the weekend. Why we did get quite a bit of corn planted, not in the best conditions, but it is in the ground. So, you know, it's going to be a big question mark on will the ethanol usage resume as the government predicted. Number one, and number two, what sort of yield will we get out of this late and planted in poorly created ground or bad conditions, I guess,
right,
create for us. I guess, you know, will the good corn from out west balance out with the bad conditions we've had in the eastern part of the Corn Belt? And I think that's what they're thinking about, and the, you know, the lowered carry out for the next year on the projections. But all in all, we weren't surprised to see the corn down a little bit with the projections that we look at for what was planted over the weekend. But we were a little bit surprised with all the talk of a few acres being switched to beans that the new crop beans were able to stay as strong as they were.
Yeah, what did rally that up? 19.5 cents in the July for the old crop, November up 11, and on out all the way up. They were up between 8 and 11 cents the rest of the way out.
Yeah, it's somewhat difficult because there were a lot of beans that went in the ground also this weekend. We're looking for probably close to a 50% planted rate here, and, you know, plenty of time to get beans in the ground and still get a good crop. We are hearing lots of stories about cash beans being difficult to buy by the crushers, beans being hard to replace, and that the crush margins are staying strong, and that China will be selling some meal into Asia, other parts of Asia, that keeps their demand strong and don't think of switching off any of the supplies that they have already bought from us into new crops. So that in itself, and then, of course, the dry conditions in the one province of China where they produce 40% of the bean crop for China, being a little bit that helps the new crop beans a little bit also. But we were just a little bit surprised at the enthusiasm and vigor for the new crop beans, Todd.
Tell me about the soil condition the producers are talking to you about as they're out in the fields. Well, what are they saying about this less than ideal planting season in the eastern Corn Belt and what they think it will mean for yield of their corn crop in one particular field or another? Are they concerned about compaction? Is it just a rough soil condition as they go through the field? What are they discussing?
Well, a lot of them, I think the last time out, not this time around, they have very caked over and packed soil,
right,
here, and they would love to see a half inch to three quarter inch gentle rain here. Actually, there's a lot of people that sort of wished we'd got a rain today that sort of seems to have eluded us for those conditions along the way. We are seeing other people that, of course, have had fields that have been underwater and stayed underwater, and they're getting rather frustrated with the situations like that over more around southeast of Indianapolis and Martinsville in that area. But all in all, we do need to see a few more rains continue here because, the ground was worked overly wet, and if it just dries out and gets hard as a rock, why, we'd have some real problems here, Todd. But all in all, you know, we're nervous about the crop here. It's not in the best condition. We've got very, very small amounts of the crop that's poking through the ground and looking good and healthy yet. So we'd sure like to see some nice normal weather here for the next 2 weeks and help us get off to a better start.
You're nervous in your area. The eastern Corn Belt farmers are nervous. The western Corn Belt farmers are probably satisfied at this time. And Chicago and the commercial trade seems to be satisfied that they've got the numbers pegged and the crop will be produced. Are they leaning too much, do you think, on just 1 year's data or maybe a couple of years' data that says we'll produce a crop one way or the other?
Well, I think we have to think of normal conditions until proven different. And, you know, right now, it still says May on my calendar. And if most of the corn is in the ground, that means that we've got a good chance, if we have normal conditions, of having a normal crop, Todd. So, you know, we have to have something that is abnormal to really kick us up here right now. You have to remember, we've got quite a bit of weather premium built in this market as we look at it right now. Just a month ago when we were probably talking on Commodity Week, we wouldn't have used these levels without some weather problems. So there is weather premium in this market.
I guess it does say May indeed on the calendar, not June yet, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right.
All right. Well, anything else to go before I let you go?
That's about it today, Todd.
Okay. Thanks much.
Bye.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us there on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Well, Memorial Day has passed, and there's still a lot of corn to plant in the eastern Corn Belt. It's now officially late in the planting season. Last year, something similar happened in the western Corn Belt, and it turned out okay. That's not likely to happen 2 years in a row. I'll have more from the Department of Crop Sciences right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Last year's growing season was very unique, but because it is the most recent one, farmers and many others are hoping for a repeat. Probably not, says University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger.
Well, last year's memory is still vivid for people, and they planted corn up to the middle of June in parts of central and northern Illinois and still got a good crop. It was late, you know, it was November till it was harvested, but it was still a good crop. We all know that that's not very likely to take place a second year, although we won't rule it out. You know, we never had very many weather patterns set in, even like the one this week, all of last year, where we've got a week without any rainfall. So it was pretty unusual in that regard. Our biggest concern, of course, is that showers turn spotty and then kind of stop altogether in some areas. And when we put corn in under these conditions, dry weather after that can really be a problem.
The hard rains early in the season, coupled with tractors moving across fields in less than ideal conditions, means the soils will be hard and compacted. Even if the corn root tries to chase moisture deeper into the soil profile, it isn't likely to be successful.
The problem is we've done enough compaction in some of these fields that the roots probably aren't going to really thrive very well. Simply because of the fact that we squashed the air out of the soil and they've got no good place to go.
Time will tell, and so will the yield monitors in the combines. If the eastern Corn Belt is to produce, then July had better be near perfect, like last year, and its memory. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon, and we always take a look at the agricultural energy markets on Tuesdays. Dan O'Brien of Kansas State University, he's an Ag Extension economist there, joins us to take a look at those markets. And he's in their Northwest Research Extension Center in Colby, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Sunshine or rainfall there?
Well, it's amazing. In western Kansas, it's actually raining. We don't know what to do about a situation like this. It's we probably have had a couple inches of rain over the last 24 hours. So this for the Kansas wheat crop, this is a big thing.
Yeah, well, that's the first question off the bat. How is that wheat crop around you at this point?
Well, here in the state of Kansas, we're probably doing pretty well. There are a few rumors in localities of some disease issues like barley yellow dwarf coming in, but generally, on an overall basis, I think the rain can't help but be a good thing for us. We keep our fingers crossed on wheat disease issues coming in with moisture like this out here, but so far things are looking pretty good. The bigger worries, of course, are down in the south in Texas and Oklahoma, and of course there are some planting issues up in the Dakotas. But at least as we sit right now, we're cautiously optimistic and thankful for where we're standing.
Last time that we talked to you, we started in but didn't have very much time to discuss an ethanol paper that you had produced on plants and the ethanol industry. Can you outline it for me very quickly?
Well, yes. As a person has looked back, as analysts look back at the history of the ethanol industry in the United States over the last 5 to 10 years, a major question that comes to people's minds, especially people locally, as they consider either investing in or supporting the development of one of these ethanol plants, the question has been, well, what will be the impact upon local grain prices? And with the idea that if a new demand center can come into a locality or a region and be and help to provide just that much more demand for local grains, and that will be a net benefit, a net positive for farmers in the area. And generally, a lot of these, analytical efforts have gone back to a very important paper by a couple economists that were employed by, one of them still is, others in private practice now, employed by Montana State University, Kevin McNew and Duane Griffiths. They published a paper in 2005 on measuring the impact of ethanol plants on local grain prices, and found, with some variation, still a pretty strong positive impact upon local prices. And again, a person can get lost in all the different details, but they showed more than just a few cents of impact at the plant site and extending as much as 60 miles out from places where these plants were located. So as the ethanol industry has gone forward, and as we've done research here in Kansas to try to determine just how profitable and how much the local impact plants have, we've tried to take another look at this and have come across some issues that I think are symptomatic of the times, especially the last year or so, as we've seen a decline in profitability of ethanol plants. And what we found, Todd, here of late is that we haven't found it during the last year when the profitability of plants had been under fire, i.e. and struggling more so, that we haven't necessarily seen the, at least statistically, some of the same impacts that were in terms of corn prices in a local market being positively affected like McNew and Griffith had back in their initial days. Now, there's gives a person, I guess, pause to scratch your head and wonder what might be going on. Well, probably what has happened in some of these local areas where these plants have been established, we probably saw a local farmers respond and likely plant more feed grains to supply those plants. So we could have seen over time here kind of a rebalancing of the supply-demand situation in those local regions. So that may have caused us to maybe oversupply some of those local markets with grain here. And then at the time when and that was happening at the same time that profitability in the ethanol market was falling off. So we've got some issues then to struggle with. And as you had, I know you've seen the same paper as well. There are some geographic issues that come into play in Kansas. Again, we have such a strong livestock feeding industry in southwest Kansas and hope to maintain it, mm-hmm. I guess, that, the competition and draw from the feedlots in our area is probably going well, is interacting with what's been going on in some of those locales where the ethanol plants are as well. So I guess we're sort of wandering down the market street in terms of figuring out just how profitable these plants will remain on into the future.
Could you speculate on the difference between a profitable plant and a plant that is operating based off just the mandate? So, and this would be profitable in terms of the whole of the ethanol and ethanol oil industry and the ability to get ethanol into the oil or gasoline industry, and just operating on the mandate, and whether it makes much of a difference in terms of your opinion on percentage of increase in the price of corn or by cents, either one.
Well, you're asking the question that that many capable ag economists have been trying to answer. There are different parts to it. I think that I'll try to address one or two of them. You know, there's a discussion right now that's going on about increasing the percent, the allowable percentage of ethanol that can be mixed in with gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's of course a major policy issue in Washington right now. So to the degree that would occur, at least the initial effects would be a net positive for the ethanol industry, for the ethanol industry itself, in terms of being able to move more product. By the time that, and I think from an economic point of view, you have to just distinguish the initial impacts from the long-term impacts. You know, but without question, where we're standing right now, to have more demand would be a positive. But the real tail of the tape is what happens several years down the road when the markets rebalance themselves again. You know, in terms of seeing how increased demand for ethanol would affect increased demand for corn prices, and if that raises corn prices up, we may eventually end up at the same place we are right now. I think at the bottom of it all, you get down to what we see so often in economically competitive markets, that being that the better managers, the better managed plants, the more efficient plants have cost advantages over those that don't, and some of those cost differentials across these plants have to do with design, modernity, I guess, modernness of the design, mm-hmm. efficiency of how they operate. Some have to do with the size and scale issues, although not all. There are some plants that are just moderate size that are pretty low cost. And a good amount of it probably has to do with what type of a debt leverage situation these plants find themselves in. If on a cash flow basis, they're covering debt payments as well as trying to operate just, you know, to keep the plant going on a marginal day-to-day basis, given the low profitability they've having, they're in a lot tougher situation survival-wise than those plants that perhaps are in a stronger equity position, don't have the debt payments to overhang them, and can just hang in there just that much longer. And without doubt, Todd, I know you've seen as well as I have the news reports about some major ethanol companies struggling financially and some going through some financial restructuring and things such as that. So it, you know, when you stand back and look at this type of industry here in U.S. agriculture as well as the general economy, it's a mature industry to some degree, in that we're down to the place of cost competition right now for survival.
That's a new and interesting thought in the ethanol industry, at least in the United States, that it's matured. We'll take more up with that point when we talk to you next time. Okay, Dan?
Thank you very much, Todd.
Thank you. Dan O'Brien is with K-State. He's in Colby, Kansas, joined us here on the Closing Mark Report, production of Illinois Public Media on a Tuesday afternoon. Back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Don Day about the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Strawberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1901, the first U.S. state motor car legislation was enacted to regulate the speed of motor vehicles. The Connecticut law established a speed limit of 12 miles per hour within city limits and 15 miles per hour outside. which were higher than the 8-mile-per-hour city and 12-mile-per-hour county speeds in the bill as originally presented. Also, the car driver was required to reduce speed upon meeting or passing a horse-drawn vehicle and, if necessary, to stop to avoid frightening the horse. In 1916, daylight savings time was introduced in Britain as a wartime measure to save fuel. The legislation was first considered in 1907, but the change failed for lack of support. Few liked the proposal, which called for adjustment of clocks in 4 weekly 15-minute chunks. When reintroduced in 1916 as a one-hour move, it passed. In 1929, the first automatic electric stock quotation board was put into operation by Sutro and Company of New York City. This was the first major advance in market information since the Edison ticker. The board was able to display the open, high, low, and last prices of each stock listed and automatically shifted the figures as changes were made. It was the first of a network of electronically posted blackboards serving the securities industry, activated by a central transmitting station via telegraph lines. The system eventually reached over 700 brokerage offices from coast to coast. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from Illinois Public Media. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Did you have a great weekend for Memorial Day?
Yeah, too bad it wasn't a little longer.
Me too. I wish it had been just a bit longer. It was a good weekend. You know, the weather was a little bit rainy here, but on and off, we're going to get more rain?
Yeah, a little rainy. Good way to describe the next 7 days, next 10 days is... We're in a pattern where the jet stream has definitely migrated further north up into Canada, and this has caused the winds aloft to be real weak. So what is happening is we're getting disturbances and areas of moisture moving across the United States, but boy, that moisture is just taking its time, drifting across the USA. You add a little bit of daytime heating with that high-angled sun this time of year, and it makes it real easy for showers and thunderstorms to form. And with nothing moving through to sweep out the moisture, off and on shower and thunderstorm activity is going to be a good bet. Now, this type of pattern tends not to focus any concentrated area of rain in one particular area, but over a large number of square miles, there's going to be the chance for showers and thunderstorms off and on well into next week.
And so is this kind of the pop-up thunderstorm or just a pop-up shower here and there?
Yes, pop-up shower and thunderstorm here and there, but with no strong frontal boundary or real organized storm system, it tends to get spread out a little bit.
Yeah, so that means producers in one field might be rained out, but could go half a mile or a mile and continue to work.
Exactly.
Okay, and then if you get further out than that, what do you see?
Well, I see this pattern persisting, probably well past next week, maybe even into the following week. There's a pattern that's sending these small, slow-moving weather systems that will drift across the U.S. I see that trend continuing. Temperatures are gradually warming to summer values, but even over the next week to 10 days, Todd, I don't see temperatures doing much other than right at normal, maybe even a hair below normal. Nothing cold, but still no sign of a early summer hot weather pattern building just yet.
Late May, early June usually means we'll start with some wheat harvest. What kind of conditions might they have in the Great Plains states?
Well, the recent spell of moisture may continue, and if there's going to be any problems, it's going to be delayed from some shower and thunderstorm activity. That activity that we're going to have here, those showers and storms, will be coming out west as well. I think they'll probably be okay as the rain has come in fits and spurts with dryness in between to allow things dry out a little bit. But we'll need to watch out for a few muddy areas in some of that winter wheat country.
Double check on China for me, please.
Well, going over to China, the weather over there, so far this spring season has really been a lot like the weather here in the United States. The trend in China, like here, has been somewhat drier, but precipitation is still going to be a good bet at or above normal values in the central and western areas. There is an area in eastern China that's starting to get warmer and drier.
Any place else around the globe that you have been watching with interest?
Well, really China's been an area we've been keeping an eye on. If we were to go over to Europe, watching the precipitation patterns there, it's gotten a little bit dry in some areas of Western Europe, and it does look like there is going to be some dryness in some areas of Central and west central areas of Russia. Some of the western Ukraine is going to get a little bit of rain, but there are some drier areas in some of the growing areas of Russia we'll need to watch.
Don, thanks much.
Thank you.
And Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Tuesday afternoon. Have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.